2 weeks ago, I said over a Torah that I heard from Rabbi Elichaim Kalbach, Shlomo's twin brother. He says, what's the inyan of Masim Toivim? What does it mean when we pray, Shitzagenu Lassis Masim Toivim Lefanecha, you know, good deeds, what's the inyan of good deeds? That everybody has a good deed, you know, everybody, there's a reason you came into this world, everybody. And sometimes you go your whole life just to do one thing, right? To be in one place, to have one choice, one opportunity. And we pray that when that moment comes, that we have the presence of mind to realize this is the reason we came to the world. And, you know, to hopefully make the right choice then, do the right thing, take the right action. In the same time that Elichaim said that Torah, he said another thing. He talked about Mashiach, and he said, there's a very interesting story from the Rebbe of Sosnovtze. I think the Rebbe of Sosnovtze was a son-in-law of the Bis Yankiv, who was the son of the Ishbitzer. That it was known the Sosnovtze Rav never said anything bad about a Yid. And in town in Sosnovtze, there was like in many Polish towns where there's a lot of Jews. So wherever there was a lot of Yidden, the Polish government had, let's just say, a little bit of trouble getting a hold of their taxes. Right? Yidden were not fond of paying taxes because basically there was no representation. So, like, why should we pay our taxes? Right? So the government, the Polish government, used to hire Yidden, Nebuch, who didn't have parnusa, to tell the government who's earning what, who's smuggling what, who's doing business with whom, who's importing from where, you know, and then the government could send in their tax collectors and recoup some of the tax that had been evaded. So these Yidden, they were without question, without doubt, the most unpopular Yidden in their town. And I saw a letter from a Yid in Piasetta, or no, in Radzin. A Yid from Radzin who was writing to the commander of the area in which he lived for permission to move to another town, because everybody in Radzin knew that he was the Musa, he was the one who was telling the government about everybody's business, and he had made so much trouble for himself that his wife couldn't go shopping. So it didn't matter how much of a salary the government was paying him, but, you know, his wife, when she went shopping, the butcher wouldn't sell her meat, the baker wouldn't sell her challis. It was like they were starving, his children. He said, they're starving to death. Please, commander, will you allow me to go? I'll do the same job for you, but just let me go to another place. It was like that in most cities in Poland. There was Nebuch one Yidl who, for economic reasons or whatever reason it was, he was the Musa. He was the talebearer, the tittle-tattler. In Sosnovtze, the Tzchoch gegeben Azami in Sainem. In Sosnovtze, there was also one of these, this peculiar species. No, everybody hated him. And apparently, he got somebody into major, major trouble. And people came to the Rebbe, to the Sosnovtze, and they asked him, please, Rebbe, could you do something? He said, what do you want me to do? What can I do? They said, you could curse him. You could curse him, and then he would die or something bad would happen to him, and then he wouldn't be able to do his business. So the Sosnovtze Rebbe said like this, oi, he says, you know what's going to happen? You'll be sitting in the barber shop, and the barber will have like his white towel around you, and he'll be cutting your hair, right? And all of a sudden, you'll hear people shouting and running on the street. And the barber will pop his head out and ask, hey, what's going on? And they'll say to him, what? You don't know? Mashiach arrived. We got the message from Warsaw. Here I, Mashiach came. So the Baba will leave you sitting there in the chair, half shaved, and he'll go running home to get his wife and kids, and you'll look around. It's like the streets are empty. Everybody's like, Mashiach is here, Mashiach is here. So you'll go running home, and your wife will already know. She heard, she's packing the stuff. She grabs the children. She grabs a bag of whatever, a little food, you know, some diapers for the kids. You grab your tefillin bag, and what can you do? You run to shul, right? So you get to shul already. The place is like bursting at the seams. It's packed. Everybody's like, did you hear? Mashiach's going, like, what's the latest? Did you hear what happened? What are we going to do? Anyway, everybody gets into shul. You look around. The Rav is standing there with his tehillim. And next to him, the dayan and the shoichet and the parnas and the president, the gabuim. You know, so like the whole bezdin is there, and they're sitting and they're talking, and the Rav gets up and he starts to daven. You can hear the guy like fire. All of a sudden, he's not there. He and his wife from the Vabashil and his daughters from the and his children, they're gone. They flashed out. It's like pop. They disappeared. Everybody says, what happened? Where did he go? He disappeared in front of our eyes. They say, oh, he's gone to Eretz Yisroel, to Mashiach. We can imagine with Tzitzach. Snemtach HaGeshrei, everybody's shouting, me, I want to go. What do? You grab hold of a Sefer Tehillim, and everybody starts saying Tehillim at the top of their voice. In the meantime, pop, 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 the Shoichet's gone, the Mashgiach is gone, the Chayder Rebbe is gone, one by all the Shaini Yidden are gone. And who's left behind? Well, I guess you're left behind. You look out, you look around, and it's like all the Yidden who haven't really paid their dues, you know. And you look out the window, and guess who's there? Well, of course, the Musar is there. He's looking in the window to check what's happening. He's got a little pad and notepaper and a pencil, and he's making a note of who went into the Beis Medrash and what happened to them. It's like, and you think to yourself, well, I'm going to be left behind with just these few cranks here. And you start doing tshiva and bits of weinzach. Everybody starts crying, please, God, don't just abandon us here in Sosnovtz and the Beis Medrash with all the Yidden, all the shiny. Everybody's gone, and people start doing teshuva reg for the first time in their life. And one by one, pop, pop, they're gone. Within 3-4 hours of the news, the Beis Medrash in Sosnovtz is empty. Nu, what happens? Well, the Musa, you know, he makes note of it. He closes his notebook and he goes home. So it doesn't take long for the news to spread around Poland that all the cities, the Yidden are gone. You go into a Jewish store, it's empty. Go knock on the rabbi's door, the house is completely abandoned. You go into the shuls, all the shuls, the lights are on, but there's nobody there. Within a few days, news comes that all the Yidden from the whole world are in Israel. And Mashiach, the king, he's welcoming all the Yidden, and they're making plans to set up a government, and they're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So, of course, some people start fighting. You know, miracles happen. Like the days when we came out of Egypt, within a short time people realize this is real. And then all of a sudden the governments from all over the world think to themselves, the Messiah arrived. Well, what are we going to do about it? And the government of Poland is going to say to itself, what are we going to do? The Messiah of the Jews. Because, you know, for the last 300-400 years, things haven't gone that well for Jews in Poland. And maybe we need to talk about, let's get on his good side. So they send somebody, an ambassador. And the ambassador comes in to Yerushalayim, and he asks to be shown into Mashiach, and he comes into Mashiach. Mashiach says, "No, what do you want?" He says, "I come from Poland." He says, "I know where you come from. What do you want?" He said, "Well, we were wondering, the government of Poland was wondering if there is something that we could..." He says, "No, there's nothing I need from the government of Poland. Thank you very much." So the ambassador comes back to the government of Poland, and they ask him, "No?" He says, "I don't know, this guy, he doesn't seem like he's very open to being bribed or anything." They said, "Well, there must be something." He said, "Well, there was nothing that I could discover. I asked people, like, what is he like? You know, maybe we could send him a car or something, you know." And they said, "Ah, the king, Melech Mashiach, no, he likes Jews. You know, he does nothing else that he likes." So somebody in the Polish government, Rif Tzichun, "No, he likes Jews, so let's send him a Jew." Great idea. So they go looking in the whole of Poland for a Yid. But you know, Poland is Judenrein. They've gone. The government says, "No, there must be somebody somewhere. There has to be a Yid." The police go searching, and they come to Sosnovce, and they people, they go him, they tell him, yeah, we had Jews here, but oh God, there was one Yid who never left, and he's that guy, he's the telltale, the Musa, he's still in town. So the Mechaptzim, right, they grab hold of him, they bring him to Warsaw, and the government says, "Well, what should we do? Let's send him a gift from the government and the people of Poland to the King Mashiach, Ayid." So they bathe him, they shave him, they dress him, they put him on a silk suit, they give him a manicure and a pedicure with a new pair of shoes, and they send him wrapped, gift wrapped, with the compliments of the Polish people and the Polish government. They sent him to Yerushalayim. So the Sosnovtsi Rebbe says to his Hasidim, "Okay." He said, "So here in town, we have a gift from the Polish government and Polish people for Mashiach, right? So you want me to, like, curse him and get rid of him and harm him and stuff? I can't do it. I can't do it. Because just think one day how precious he's going to be. Like, everybody in Israel is going to turn around and look, ah, there's a Yid. A Yid is being delivered." You know, when you think about all the stories that you get about Mashiach, this story is so sweet because it's the only story I ever heard that is like a little window on what is it after Mashiach comes. Because I know from every rabbi that I go ever into a synagogue, he says, you know, and it should be, it will be with the coming of the Redeemer, the Mashiach. Yeah, I hear a lot about what Mashiach brings, Mashiach, and how to bring Mashiach, and when Mashiach, and this Mashiach, but afterwards, I don't hear much. And here's a story, because, what does it say? The story says, Mashiach likes Yidden. What does he love? He's got Ahavas Yisroel. And where does his Ahavas Yisroel come from? It comes from David HaMelech. David HaMelech, if you asked him what's his favorite thing in the world, he would tell you without a question, "My favorite thing is Yidden." This week in the Seder, the Degel Machne Ephraim asks a question. The Torah says, God says to Moshe, "Laman tesaper ba'aznei bincho ben bincho," in order that you should tell your children and your children's children, "Es asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim," the fun that I made of Egypt, the mockery that I made of Egypt, and the miracles, the wonders that I did there. So the Degel Machne Ephraim, the grandson of the Holy Baal Shem Tov, he says, "Here I was asked a question. We say on the Haggadah of Pesach, Leman Tizkor, in order that you remember, Yoim Tzeischom Eretz Mitzrayim, the day you came out of Egypt, Kol Yimei Chayecha, all the days of your life. And the Chachomim, we have from the Mishnah, they say, Yimei Chayecha, the days of your life, that refers to this world. Kol Yimei Chayecha, all the days of your life, that refers to
the days of the Messiah. So, the question, the Degas says, the question that somebody asked me is here in the Torah says, God says, in order that you tell your children and your grandchildren about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Chachomim say that talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim is something that we're even going to be doing when Mashiach comes. So what's, why only three generations, or in fact two generations? So, there's a long Torah. It boils down to this. He says, Zek habola min adoni ovi zekeni zechreinu. This is a Kabbalah from my grandfather, my master, the Holy Baal Shem Tov. Ki ze hu mamish bechinas Mashiach. When you have a chance to teach Torah to your children and to your grandchildren, then you're Mashiach. So, what is Yimei Chayecha? What are the days of your life, right? When you can learn Torah with your children, right? What's Kol Yimei Chayecha, all the days of your life? When you can learn Torah with your children in the Yemei Samashiach, in the Baal Shem Tov, and these are the words that Degel says, Ki zehu mamish b'chinas b'yas Mashiach, nimtze do v'do achas. They're both the same thing. Ba'aznei bincha and Yimei Chayecha. It's all the same. Because when you learn Torah with someone you love, I'm not saying learning Torah like when you're, you know, when the Torah you're teaching them is like sticks, right? Like bullets. Like slashing somebody with a knife. I'm not talking about that kind of a Torah, right? I go to shul. Comes the time for the Rav to speak, my blood pressure goes up so high, it's high, you know, I feel like I'm going to platz, going to bust. Because, you know, it feels like every word of the Torah is a smack. Shevet Musar, right? The rod of correction. I miss Shlomo so much, because every Torah was like water for a person dying of thirst. You know? It was like a caress. Every time I heard Torah from Shlomo, I felt, whoa, you know, the most incredible thing in the world is to be a Jew. And Nebuch, I go into shuls and I hear Torah and I think to myself, you know, the greatest burden a person could be born with is to be born a Jew. Ah, but look what is being promised. But Shlomo, when he said Torah, it's like you didn't want Mashiach to come so fast because this Torah is, I want it to last as long as it can last, right? And Shlomo used to say, when Mashiach comes, look, half of us are going to jump out the window. That's why God says, call out, Nachamu Nachman, Ami Yomi Lekechem, Dabru El Yerei Yerushalayim, Kiru Eleho, call out to her, because when Mashiach comes, like, he's going to have to come chasing us, because we're going to go running away, because we're afraid, because we're ashamed, because of this. But the emes is,
that when you're sitting with people you love and you're learning Torah, then you're already Mashiach, right? You're Mashiach when you're saying Torah, and you're Mashiach when you're listening, because you, this is Olam Haba, right? So the Rebbe Rabbunim says, it says, Kili kal b'chor b'yoyim ha-koisi, because I own every firstborn on the day that I smite the Egyptians. So the question is, just because God smites the Egyptians, why does that mean that our b'chorim, that our firstborns, are holy to God? What does it really mean? I mean, you say, "V'lo yiten ha-mashchis." God says, "I'm not going to allow the destroyer to go into the Jewish houses, where he's going to jump over the Jewish houses and he'll see the blood on the door." And therefore, kaddish li kol b'chor, you have to sanctify all the b'chorim for me. Why? Why? Hey, just because you didn't hit me? I mean, you were going, ast osketail petch. Fair enough, right? God was going around, he was smacking and smiting, and it was, tigigangin aroich, there was smoke. He was smoking. But what, so what, you know? Just because he was smiting that one, so therefore this one has to be grateful that he didn't get smitten? That's the Rebbe Rabbunim's question. Haloi kein haderech, lehakuis lizeh veloi lizeh. I mean, yeah, you're hitting this one, you're not hitting indiscriminately. So, he says, you know what Makkos Bechoris was? It wasn't a plague in the sense of like a devastating illness. It wasn't a plague like a destructive force, like a sword, like an army, like a troop of demons. That's not what happened. What happened in Egypt is that God revealed himself. You know, God is Rishon. God is the first. God is the numero uno. And when God revealed his oneness, his firstness, his numero uno-ness, when God revealed his reishis, so everything else that considered itself reishis just disappeared. Egyptians considered themselves reishis. They considered themselves the top, the head, the first, the best, the most. Egyptians considered themselves the bee's knees. So when God revealed his bee's kneesness, that was the end of the Egyptians. So it's not that there was any kind of a destructive force that was released in Egypt. It was a perception. In that perception, all lies just disappeared. It was a revelation. It was a gilui shechina, right? So that's why the Bechor of the Shifcha, and the Bechor of the Shevi, right? The firstborn of the slave, the firstborn of the prisoner. Everybody died because firstbornness became a concept that needed clarification. So the Yidden also needed Hatzolah. Because we also had ideas of being firstborn. We also had such a concept, better than, more than. In the presence of the more than that is God, where's there room? So God says, I'm taking you with me. You belong to me now. I'm first, you're first. See, wherever there's a relationship with God that we try to have where God is the giver and we're the receiver, you know, it doesn't work. Because we don't have the kelim with to hold what God is giving. We just don't have. So we have to be in imitatio Dei. We have to be like. That's already a relationship that works. Like. Yes, more like or less like, but it's like. So God says, you now are part or endowed with my reshis, with my oneness. And that's the meaning of because I'm going out into Egypt, says God, and that is going to destroy all the firstborns, so you need to be holy to me. And the Rebbe Rabbanim says that's why it says kachatzos lailo, like midnight, and not bachatzos lailo, not at midnight, because midnight is not a real place or time where, you know, there is no middle of the night. A moment ago it was before midnight, and now it's after midnight. So that changeover is one where only God really can say such and such has happened. God can really reveal that moment. You know, by the time the clock has struck midnight, it's not midnight anymore. So in the revelation of midnight, that is the revelation of the oneness of God, is the revelation of Bechoira, of Reshis. So God says, I need you to become mine. And in becoming mine, then you're Reshis. So when God says, Bni, Bechoira Yisrael, my son, my child, my firstborn, the Eden, now we understand what it means. It doesn't mean reshis oini, that every person has their own power, and then that power, you know, there's a first and a most. It means just the opposite. When we talk about bechoira as a yid, to be firstborn, it means exactly the opposite of what it meant to be a firstborn in Egypt. You know, the Rebbe says, the Ishbitzer says, when God says to Moshe, gives him the commandments, he doesn't give him the commandment of Bechoira after the commandment of Pesach. But Moshe, when he gives us the commandments, he first gives us the commandment of Pesach, Matzah, Moror, and then gives us the commandment of Kaddish Likol Bechor. So the Ishbitzer says, Moshe was doing us a favor, because you know where my trouble, where does my trouble come from in sexuality? Like, where does it come from that a person doesn't have 100% control over where he's being mashpia, right? Where the flow, when the flow comes from a person, how come a person doesn't do 100% right? So the Ishbitzer says, because we don't eat properly. In other words, we don't receive properly. If we were to receive 100% properly, we wouldn't give any wrong. The thing is, God doesn't punish him for what you receive improperly, right? The halacha is, you know, if somebody looked at me or gave me a thought that I didn't want, I don't get punished for that. But if I act out on that thought, then there's a punishment. But really, the acting out comes from the thought. And the thought can be something that came into me and I didn't even want it. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you have to watch what you're eating. You have to watch what you're being mekabel. You have to watch what you're receiving. If you watch what you're receiving, then you'll be able to watch what you're giving. So he gives us the mitzvah of Pesach, which is matzah and moror, and Haggadah.
The Rebbe Rabbanim said that all the mitzvahs that we do around Pesach, they're like jewelry. They're like a necklace that we wear. You know, when we come on the Olam HaEmes, when we come on the world of truth, then we wear jewelry, like the mitzvahs that we did, they shine like jewels on us. So some people, some Yidden, come in Olam HaEmes and they're wearing this really thick necklace of gold sparkling with diamonds and jewels and rubies and sapphires, because all the chumras, all the stringencies and the care that we take with making Pesach and not to eat anything that's a sofik mesupik with a sfek sfeika, that has something which is all the more stringency that we put on, is like more and more pure gold, more and more diamonds. And we wear it around the neck. The necklace is worn around the neck because that's the place where we receive all the hashpoas that are coming to us. The air that we take in, the ruchnias, the food that we take in, everything, the smells that we take in, the tastes that we take in, everything, all the shefa that we take in, comes down through our nose and our mouth and to the neck, right? So the Ishbitzer says, and Moshe Rabbeinu said to us, you know, it's very hard to protect your bechoira, right? The Indian of Reshis Oini. Yaakov, you know, calls Reuven Reshis Oini because he was like the first sexual, the first time that Yaakovina was sexual, he created Reuven, and that's the Indian of Bechoira, that's how we are Meshpia, where we put ourselves out into the world. So Moshe says, if you really want to protect your Bechoira, then you have to keep Pesach first. Keeping Pesach, besides all the chumras of eating matzah and murah and drinking the koises and the thyme and the this and the that, ultimately the greatest Pesach, the greatest thing on Pesach is doing it with our children, with our eniklach. And that's Bechinas Mashiach, the man to sape bo'azne bincho, ben bincho. And that's the end of Kol Yemecheyecho Lovely Mois Mashiach. It's already here. And it's even higher. The Baal Shem Tov used to say that somebody who keeps Pesach properly is upgehitten the whole year. If you do the Haggadah properly, then all your words are protected for the whole year. God makes sure that nothing comes out of your mouth that isn't mevura. The Ari said that somebody who can really be careful not to eat chametz, then from in the Shemaim they'll protect him not to eat anything also the whole year.